Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. I have a fun interview for you, but before we get to it, I want to chat a little bit about the Retro Remix podcast Patreon community. Do you read romance? Do you want to connect with other romance-loving community members? Do you want to read romance books and talk to the author about it? Do you want to have weekly book recommendations? If you say yes to any of this, then you should join our Patreon community. Each week, I send out an email with book recommendations that include Kindle Unlimited, Audible Escapes, and ARCs that you should pick up. I also share upcoming romance events that you should check out, and the group meets a couple times a month, and we talk about one book a month with the author joining us. And we also meet to discuss book recommendations and other fun events. If you want to join, click the link in the show notes. Now let's get today's interview. I'm so excited to share that I'm chatting with Carly Bloom today. Carly wrote Big Bad Cowboy, which was my first cowboy romance, and it was so good. It's steamy, it's just so much fun, great small town romance. It's just like, as someone who doesn't read cowboy romance, this was just like the perfect read. It is a must read, and if in this interview we chatted about Carly's journey to get her first book published, what it was like to write small-town romance, and of course, around the book recommendations. Now let's go to an interview. Hi, Carly. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I write contemporary Western romance, and I live on a cattle ranch in South Texas with my husband, and we have 5 kids, although the baby is 16, so I'm not corralling 5 little kids anymore. Oh, and a bunch of animals.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I bet you most writers say the same thing, but it was reading. I'm a huge reader, an avid reader. And but I've always written, and I used to write nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I had family humor newspaper column and a family humor blog. And my kids got to the age where they realized they were that their dirty laundry was being aired for other people's entertainment. Mm-hmm. So they asked me to stop embarrassing them. So now I write steamy romance, and I'm pretty sure they're still embarrassed. So,
yeah, I think it's like it goes from one place to the other. It's like, oh my gosh, she's writing steamy scenes here.
Yeah, well,
with the shortage of buttons.
That's right.
So, what was your journey to get your first book published?
Let's see. I wrote my first book, and I know a lot of authors like will say they made several attempts, but I'm not a quitter. So even though my first book wasn't working, I never like gave up and started trying to write a different one. I just stuck with that book. I like to tell people that my hero started out with a flip phone, because like he did. But anyway, I wrote a book, and I got feedback on it, and I revised it. And then I started trying to find an agent, and that I don't even know how many query letters I sent out, but it was a lot. So I ended up getting the manuscript in with a small press, and that small press went under right before my book was scheduled to be released. Mm-hmm. Which I'm grateful for that it wasn't released. And then, because a lot of publishers won't take something that's already been out there. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky in that regard. And then I started querying again. And I saw there is on Twitter, there's a hashtag manuscript wish list. Like it's mm-hmm. hashtag MSWL. And a writer friend, Allison Bliss, told me that someone, an editor for Entangled, was looking for a book very similar to what I had. So I submitted it, and then within hours, the editor I submitted it to was tweeting about it. And she stayed up all night long reading it, and then I read more of her tweets in the morning. It's so weird to watch that happen. And so anyway, it ended up getting acquired by Entangled, and it released in 2015. So that was my journey. I think, you know, it was a lot of disappointment as far as like getting all the rejections and building up a tough skin, then finally getting a bit of good news only to have it taken away because the press went under, then getting good news again. So I think that's pretty common. I think none of us have like a super smooth path to getting our first book published.
Yeah, I think I've asked this question to quite a few authors, and what I've found out is that, you know, it's not a linear process. And there's a lot of starts, there's a lot of stops, there's a lot of rejection, there's a lot of like, just keep pushing along as opposed to just having this magical process where you just quote to one agent, the agent picks you up, and you have option, you have all these different things. That's a really rare process. Like for the most part, it's just like, it's all over the place. And so yeah. It's a lot of highs, it's a lot of lows, but it's just a process.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that I didn't know what it was before I started. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think I don't know if I maybe wouldn't have tried, but, you know, I had my rose colored glasses on, and in a way they protected me. I kept thinking, well, this next one will be the one. And that's what kept me going. Now that I know everything that I know, I try to keep new writers from being too discouraged. I think it's really good for us to get our stories out about the process, so people know what to expect and that what's happening to them isn't, you know, unique, and that we've all been through it.
Yes. So let's talk about writing. Do you follow an online? Do you see what the show leads to? Are you a plotter or are you a painter?
I want to be a plotter so bad. And I have all the books, and I've taken all the seminars, and I have done everything, and I cannot plot to save my soul. I don't really feel too much like a pantser, probably because of I'm so anxious. Like I feel like someone who flies by the seat of their pants is real carefree, and that's not me. I'm just really stressed out the whole time I'm writing. But the way I see it is that you have some people build stories. Mm-hmm. And again, I wish that was me. They know what parts they have to go in, and they can like say, okay, this is my conflict, this is my hero's wound, this, and they just build it. They just freaking build it. And it's so amazing to watch. I have a lot of friends who write like that. Mm-hmm. I'm more of an uncoverer. Like my story is like just this mountain of mud, and I have to dig through it and find what's underneath. Mm-hmm. And it's sloppy, cumbersome, and it takes a long time. And I go down a lot of rabbit trails that don't lead anywhere. And yeah, so that's how I do it, the easy way.
Everyone has their own process, just embrace it. So
yeah, I'm trying to embrace it, but we're not sleeping together yet. So
awesome. How do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of your ideas, inspirations, characters, especially writing a series, keeping track of all the different moving pieces?
Well, I guess I get ideas from weird sources, and I'm a big daydreamer. Like I'm a huge daydreamer. I have a really hard time even listening to people talk, because I'm usually just thinking about whatever I'm thinking about instead. But it's usually like a scene. Something will tickle me, something I hear or see, and then I'll build a little scene around that in my head, and then I try to uncover a bigger story around that scene. So with Big Bad Cowboy, I started that story around in the fall, like Halloween was coming up. That's like my favorite holiday, just about. And I just started wondering what would happen if, and I live, you know, in a small town, so I'm real familiar with the workings of small towns. And I just wondered what would happen if two people were in costume, had, you know, an interlude, a masked anonymous interlude, and then find out that, you know, boom, there you are together afterwards. In the same small town. I just thought that would be funny and hilarious and have a lot of conflict. So that was my inspiration for the first book in this series.
I love it. And so do you share your work along the way? Do it's completed for other series?
I have three people that I will let see what I'm working on. And that's it. Just three trusted people who know how to talk to me without breaking me and who know how to give feedback that is constructive. Like, I don't want someone to be a cheerleader, and I also don't want someone to be looking for, you know, mistakes. So I've got three people that I trust, and really no one else sees it. I'm really easily thrown off course if I sense, like, I'll take something so to heart. If someone says, oh, this isn't really working for me, then I assume it won't work for anybody and I drop it. So which can be devastating. So I've culled it down to three people who know how to deal with me and keep me inspired and working instead of, you know, the opposite.
That's amazing. Let's talk about your book. So Big Fat Cowboy, you mentioned that they have a mass interlude, and then they end up working together, and there's a little bit of Red Riding Hood, but mistaken identity, lots of texting. why pick this story and trope? Because there's like enemies to lovers, there's like a little bit of everything here.
I guess because I read a little bit of everything, and I always think I have one trope, like in my head, I'm like, this was the enemies to lovers in my head. And then when other people read it, they start picking out all the other tropes, and I'm like, oh my God, yes, there's like 9 tropes in this thing. like I don't ever see it that way until afterwards. Like, I'm almost always an enemies to lovers girl. Yeah. I'm a peacemaker. I like to bring people together. It gives you great conflict. So I always think I'm writing enemies to lovers, which I am, but then I'm also writing like a whole bunch of other tropes in there too.
Yeah, I think it brought it, like the banter, the texting, like it was just like you brought it with the bang. Like, it was just like there was enemies to lovers, but there was also the mistaken identity. Like, yeah, like they don't know they're talking to each other. That just felt like really cool. Like, it was like dual timeline in some ways in a relationship. Like, it just, like, it was really cool.
So. Well, I really had 4 protagonists in that book, not 2.
Yeah.
Because I had Maggie and Travis unmasked as themselves. And then, meanwhile, Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf were also carrying on with their texting. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, I describe it, actually a reader described it as a kinky cowboy version of You've Got Mail meets Little Red Riding Hood. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. And that's what I did. I didn't do it intentionally, but that's what I did. So, yeah, but that one really has 4 characters, doesn't it?
It does. And it was just so good. So,
and Travis's character, well, both of them are really different as their alter egos.
Yes.
You know, Maggie's like super sexy as Little Red Riding Hood, and Travis is like almost alpha. You know, he's kind of my heroes are like, what do they say? They're beta on the streets and alpha in the sheets.
Woo!
That's kind of how he was. As the wolf, he was kind of alpha, but in real life, you know, he's sweet Travis. He's my cinnamon roll. Yeah.
Yes. And it was like, I think it just brought a sense of like, of overall, like it completed the story. Like, it just explained, like, you know, the character was so developed so well. Like, there was actually more to the character than what we just see from their interaction with one another. Like, I think they got deeper, you know, in different ways through both storylines.
Yeah, well, good, because that's what I was going for. So, Yes.
So, let's talk about Henry. How hard was it to write him? Because he was adorable, by the way.
Well, I have 5 kids, so Henry was easy to write.
Oh,
I'm super familiar with 5-year-olds. So Henry was easy. He was easy for me to write. He was fun.
Yeah, he was adorable. So let's talk about creating the world Big Bird in, because you actually create a town where it's small town romancers and you live in this uncovering, so you're familiar with it. But what was the process of like creating that world of just making stories within that world?
For me, the town is like a character in the book. It had that much flavor to it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I like to think that if you were to line my characters up, like stick one of my characters with other people's characters and just have them say a line, I'd like for people who've read my books to be able to say, oh, that was Travis or that was Ford. And I feel the same way about my town. I think that if you lined up my small town with other small towns, like you'd be able to tell the flavor, oh, that's Big Verde. So I developed it kind of like I develop characters. Mm-hmm. And like I still live just outside the same small town where I was raised. So kind of like I know how 5-year-olds work, I know how small towns work. When you're in a small town, everyone is a member of your community. You don't really build, you know, like when you're in a city or even online environments, you build your communities of people that you want in your community. And when you're in a small town, everyone is your community. And it doesn't really matter what your history is with them or what you have in common with them. Those are the folks you see every day. Those are the people who have kids that your kids are going to play with. And everybody knows your business. Everybody knows your secrets. Whenever I would post something on Facebook about like stress from writing under a deadline, my high school physics teacher would chime in. He'd comment, "You can do it, Carly." And then he'd like be, I remember back in 10th grade, and he'll mention like a test or something. like you don't ever, these people stay a part of your life. I got a card in the mail when my second book came out from my English teacher. So I'm real familiar with how small towns work. And I know that you've got a certain character. You'll have your holier-than-thou character, that would be our Miss Mills. And you'll have everybody's related to everybody else. Every town's going to have a good old boy, every small South Texas town anyway, like Baba. You've got people keeping secrets, but everybody finds them out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess because I'm steeped in small town life, it wasn't super hard for me to create my small town. It's not based on my small town, but I think that you're going to find the same elements in pretty much every small community.
Yeah, I think so. I think as someone who likes to read small town romans, I think it's just a love of the world. The town is just as important character as the couple that we're reading about. The supporting characters of the town are just as important as, you know, the couple. They bring flavor, they bring some joy to the reading experience, which is kind of like fun. So
that's really fun for me. Secondary characters are really, really fun for me. And the book that I think Must Love Cowboys will be up for pre-order maybe by the time this podcast comes out.
Yep.
But the heroine is Alice Martin, the town librarian, and she was such a secondary character in Big Bad Cowboy. Like she was literally just the librarian who was pestering Claire and Maggie to join book club. Mm-hmm. I didn't really develop her at all. But then she really came out in the second book, came into her own. And now she's my everything because I'm revising that book right now. And I just love her. And she's in my head 24/7. And it's just amazing how secondary characters will just rise to the surface and say, my turn, it's my turn now. And so I really love secondary characters because you never know what they're going to reveal to you and who they're going to grow into being.
Yeah, as someone who loves series, I absolutely adore, you know, when the author brings in like some side character who has like nothing to do in book one, but maybe by book four, you're like the hero and the heroine. You see them grow as each book happens. You see the process and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like the joy. As a reader, it's a joy to watch all these side characters fall in love or just or start businesses or start doing different things and going through their journey as you get to know the town. So I'm excited for Alice's book.
And it's also fun to like I really, really, really want to write a story about JD and Gabriel and how they met.
Yeah.
So I started in my newsletter, I promised people, they're probably my most popular characters, by the way, is JD and Gabriel. And so I keep promising my newsletter subscribers that I'm going to write their meet cute. And I've started it, and it's freaking adorable because it's so funny to introduce characters and they're already together. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how they met because they haven't told me. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm learning how they met and how they came to be together, and it's just really adorable. It makes me love them even more. And now I'm like, how did I write their story without even knowing all of what I know now?
It's the uncovering process of just removing the muck and just trying to see how they come about.
Yeah,
like just kind of like just opening the gift more and more. New gifts are coming up.
Yeah exactly.
So there are some sexy signs. What is the process of writing them?
I don't really have a process. I know I have friends who'll be like, okay, so I've cleared out the house and I've got my glass of wine and I light a candle and I try to, you know, get there. I don't have to do anything like that. For me, I love writing sex scenes, and it's really, really, really not about the sex because I've said this before, but it's totally true, you know. I'm not going to reinvent sex. I'm not going to invent anything nobody's ever heard of before. There's literally only so many places you can put that thing. So for me, it's all about the circumstances. So I'm in my sex scenes that everybody says are super steamy, but there's not as much description physically of what's going on. Although I will put them in, you know, unique circumstances like a shed or a loft bed of an Airstream trailer or things like that. But it's mostly about what's going on in their heads, and people are funny and weird and delightful. And when they're anxious or nervous or turned on, all of those things are amplified. So for me, when I write a sex scene, it's like, what's the purpose of this? How is this going to change something, the way they feel about each other and the way they feel about themselves? And you really have to get in their heads. And people have funny thoughts when they're having sex, and they have insecurities, and so all of that comes into my sex scenes. And that's what makes me tick when I'm writing sex scenes. It's not about the sex itself, but it's about everything that it's stirring up, everything that it's causing. And I do like humor in my scenes, so they're not typically going to just be, let's go into the bedroom and have sex on the bed like normal people. That's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, they're really great. There are some good sexy times. Sometimes, like, who enjoys that? Like, when reading romance, I'm like, these are so good. So,
I love
the fact there's like, it, as you said, there's humor, there's danger, there's like, it's not just a physicality, there's like a purpose, and they're like in interesting places. Like, you just put in the characters and like, let's do them in a shag. You know? like you're like, oh, okay. it feels fresh. That's what it does. It looks fresh.
Aw, thanks. That's awesome to hear. I'm glad. You know, especially with my heroes, I it's really important to me that they be vulnerable, mm-hmm. Both in their actions, but also in their thoughts. And there's a lot of room for that in sex scenes. And in Cowboy Come Home, you know, Ford has that instance where he's actually trying to slow things down. And he's trying to conjure up an image of his granny in her threadbare house coat, a memory that is burned into his brain from like his teenage years when, and so like he has little tricks and stuff and things that he's thinking about. And I just love putting stuff like that in there. It's unexpected, but it hopefully makes people laugh. And, you know, we can't just be so serious all the time because, you know, things are funny. People are funny. We do funny stuff.
Yeah. I really love the humor that you infuse within the books. Like, they both are, like, the actual three, because I read the novella, too. They'll infuse some sort of humor around it. Like, it's just, like, life, it doesn't have to be so serious. Like, this can right. be, that can be fine. So, so let's talk about Cowboy Come Home. That's the second chance romance that deals with grief. Ford has been lost, and he feels like he was cursed, therefore he can't settle down with Claire or even the town. You know? Yeah. Like, he just felt the curse was happening, and he could not settle down. Why was it important to share this part of the character of Ernie? Like, because, you know, is a curse real? Is it, you know, like can well, he actually do it? You know, so, yeah.
I think that... you know, and the message of that was that when we feel cursed, it's usually something we've done to ourselves, mm-hmm. ourselves, and we can change our circumstances. Mm-hmm. The grief part of the journey, I wrote Cowboy Come Home while I was grieving for my dad who passed away. Thank you. And so, yeah, that was really... that's where I was, and a lot of people commented, even though it's a funny book and it has its funny moments, that it definitely has some more somber undertones, and that's because, you know, that was my environment at the time. That was my headspace. I was really, really sad when I wrote that book, and there's a lot of mine and my dad's relationship, and Claire and Jerome. My dad had throat cancer. That's actually not what killed him. Like Jerome, he overcame that. Mm. But it was that same. I just pulled in a lot of things from my own life while I was writing that book. But mostly I wanted it to be hopeful that that a lot of the problems that we experience are things that we can turn around. We curse ourselves with mm-hmm. Our patterns of thinking and the identities we give to ourselves that don't need to be adhered to, that we have the power to change it. And that was what I wanted Ford's journey to mm-hmm. be. And likewise, I wanted Claire's journey to be where she realized she was enough as a woman. She was enough all by herself, whether or not she ever found her Prince Charming. And it was only after she accepted that completely that, of course, she got what she wanted all along.
Yeah, I really love this. This was, like, different. I feel like the town was different, and I can see that for this book. But I love the town. I love the relationship between Ford and Claire. I love their journey. That it just felt, like, very, like, I don't know. It felt like coming home, which is probably come home. The place of just coming together. But I love the fact that, you know, Claire's journey, she was like enough, and then she was able to get the gift before. Like, it was, she needed to feel whole before mm-hmm. she can actually be with someone, you know.
Yeah, and even though I'm in romance and we all are writing happy ever afters, which usually mm-hmm. include, you know, or always include finding a partner. You know, I raise two daughters, and I always want them to know they are enough, and mm-hmm. someone else's happy ever after does not have to look like yours, and it doesn't have to include another person. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to me that people know that they're enough, especially women, all by themselves.
Yes, I love this message. So when is Alice's book coming out?
It is coming out in the spring of 2021, and Alice is all on board for being all enough, all on her own, and she is not looking for happy ever after with a man. She considers herself happily self-partnered, in the words of Emma Watson. So, yeah, poor Beau Montgomery. That's all I've got to say. He's the hero.
I can't wait. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. So, and you can pre-order soon. So I'll post the links for pre-ordering.
Okay, awesome.
So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. Robert, do you want to share with the audience what they should read next? What is your favorite genre?
What is my favorite what?
Genre.
Oh, well, obviously romance. I read a lot of romance. As far as subgenres within the genre, I pretty much don't care. I will read paranormal, I'll read cowboy, I'll read suspense, pretty much across the board. If it's character driven, I don't really care what the setting is. If I love it, I love it. And outside of romance, I'm a huge Haruki Murakami fan. He's a Japanese writer, and I have everything he's ever written, both fiction and nonfiction. Love him.
I love it. What has been a book you read this past year that you love?
What of Haruki's or of anybody's?
Anybody. It's up to you.
Oh, right now, right now I'm one of those people that always have like three or four books on my Kindle open, and depending on my mood, dictates, which one I read. So I'm like lots and lots and lots of books open at one time. So, I just finished, Dance Away With Me by Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and she's pretty much my queen in romance. I've been reading her for years and years and years and years and years. So I rewarded myself with that book when I turned my manuscript in to my editor. I already had it on my Kindle. It had just come out, and boom, like I hit send, and then I opened the book. Loved it. And it's Dance Away With Me. I also just read Jock Blocked by Pippa Grant. And she is freaking hilarious if you've never read a Pippa Grant book. And Jock Blocked features a hero who is the oldest virgin in baseball. It's fantastic. And I've read Sasha Summer's Jace, which is the first in a new series for her, which features like a country western music family. And she writes fast. She and Pippa Grant both do. I'm jealous. And she also had a book called Accidentally Family that I am like 60% in. And I love that book because it features an older couple. I don't mean like, you know, in their 80s, but they have teenage children. So not young 20s. And let's see, what else did I read? I just finished Seven Stones to Stand or Fall, which is a bunch of Outlander short stories. I'm a huge Outlander fan. And, oh, Second Chance Cowboy by McKenna Lee. I just downloaded that, and I'm probably 20-30% of the way in. I think this is her first book, and it's cowboy romance. And let's see. Oh, I'm looking at my Kindle right now. I have Jenny Holiday's newest book, which is the second one, I think. And the first one was Mermaid. Mermaid Inn. So this is the second book to that. I also have a new Laura Drake cowboy book. I think it's a cowboy for keeps. Yeah, I can keep going. And I have a big Verde book club in my fan group. We're having our first meeting next month, and we're reading a Rebecca Weatherspoon book, which is an erotic story called Haven. It's one of her older older books.
Oh, this is so exciting. I love it.
If you ask me why I write, it's because I read. I read a lot. So, I mean, like
I love all these book recommendations, and I'm going to be downloading quite a few of them. So, thank you. Awesome. So, tell us where you can find me online.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and I have a fan group called Carly's Bloomers, which is on Facebook. And we do giveaways. I do a monthly bloomer box. My next one is going to be, it's Farrah's latest book.
The Boyfriend Project or?
Boyfriend Project. We're giving that. Yes, we're giving away the Boyfriend Project. So I give away a bloomer box every month, and then we do, right now we're doing virtual happy hours too, where I get to talk with readers, and it's just a lot of fun. We were going to play Family Feud, but we couldn't get it together. We couldn't figure out how to play it. So, we just did, one of those, trivia nights, and then we had a scavenger hunt that was hilarious. So I like to interact with readers a lot. So I hope that anybody new out there will come and find me. I'm lonely and it's a pandemic. So come hang out with me.
I love this virtually. So much.
Hang out with me virtually. I should add.
This is so awesome. Yeah, I love that we're meeting virtually in the pandemic. Like, it just brought us together. So I love this. This is amazing.
I love it too. And you know, when I had my first author Zoom event, I was like so stupidly nervous, and now it's just like, you know, do you really need to put on a bra for a virtual happy hour? No. And like the first time I did one, you know, like I did my hair and I had makeup and I was so nervous, and now it's just like, no, we're past that.
I love this. So
didn't even take all that long.
So thank you, Carly, for being in the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you once for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.